The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PlayUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 185. Super excited to have Dr. Dan Reardon with us today. Dr. Dan came recommended by a listener, Tyler Breedlove, and Tyler, appreciate you recommending Dr. Dan. But guys, I want to encourage everyone that listens to the show that that's part of the reason why I started this show, was to get recommendations, to get this community of people interacting with one another and making suggestions and making recommendations and things like that. So please send me emails. Please reach out to me through social media and recommend people to be on the show. I mean, there's no shortage of people to get on, for sure. But I, at the same time, I want to be exposed to people that are outside of my circle of influence. And real excited to come across Dr. Dan this way. You know, they have he's a co-owner of a company called Fitness Genes. And essentially what they do is they take a DNA test and they look at 43 different fitness genes. And based off that, are able to give you some diet, some strength and conditioning recommendations based off what your body will respond to. So it's obviously, getting down to the cellular level, which is really, really cool. And I took the test. I'm still waiting on my results. But I didn't want to hold up the show to get those, but just real excited to see kind of what that's all about. And it was great to have him on the show. We talked about those, how they came across, focusing on this. He's a medical doctor, he's an author, he's been an editor of Muscle and Fitness and a lot of different things, and why he feels like really getting, focusing on genetics is important. The process that they went about kind of identifying these 43 genes that they look at, and just the whole science behind this technology. And so I know you're going to get a ton out of it. I learned a ton from this. Before we do, we want to make sure we recognize our sponsor for the show, Sorinex. I am very bummed that I'm not going to be able to be at the grand opening of the new weight room, the extension of the warehouse down South Carolina on December 10th. I think if you're in that area or you can get down there on December 10th and you've been invited, absolutely go. It's going to be an incredible, incredible weekend, incredible deal. And I hate not being there. I'm going to be speaking over in London with Brendan Chaplin, another former Iron Game Chalk Talk guest. So I'm excited about that, but I'm bummed that I'm missing the open house. But I'm definitely gonna make sure that I get down there and get a workout in the new gym. But Sorinex, you guys all heard me talk about the guys at Sorinex. They're coming on again as a sponsor in 2017. We're doing some real exciting things in 2017 with our sponsorship packages and what we're gonna be doing with the podcast. And we got a new web show coming out and some other things. And they're quality people. They're so supportive of the strength and conditioning community and being able to support things like the podcast here and the web show and summits and things that we got going on, but so willing to give back. And that's what it's all about. Just surrounding yourself with great people and great products. And they have that in spades. And so if you're in the market for your weight room, make sure you reach out to them. If you haven't ever attended a Summer Strong event, make sure that you're getting prepared to do that this next year. Sign up, register for that. But reach out to these guys, follow them on social media. They're just quality people, every one of them, and can't say enough great things about them. So I want to get to this episode with Dr. Dan. Sit back and enjoy, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. Super excited to have Dr. Dan Reardon with us. He's over, obviously, in London. It is night. He's staying on late for us. And, man, I'm excited about this one. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Dan, you've had quite the journey, man. I mean, most of us strength coaches that are listening, for sure, you know, we grew up on muscle and fitness, and you were an editor there. You're a two-time author. You're an MD, and then obviously you're the co-founder of Fitness Genes, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But I'd love for you to kind of go, just for the people that don't know you as well, I'd love for you to kind of go into your fitness journey, kind of what got you into it, you know, and then just briefly some of those stops along the way to Fitness Genes there.
Okay, sure. Well, I used to be a 400-meter runner, but when I started medical school back in 1998, I tore my hamstring quite badly. Rather than quitting athletics completely, I kind of made the decision, but rather than going to coaching athletics while I was at medical school, I decided to train as a personal trainer because my interest has always been sort of fitness and nutrition. So in my summer break at medical school, I trained as a trainer, did a nutrition qualification. Ultimately, I got the American College of Sports Medicine certification, and I opened my own gym back in 2001, personal training center. I took a year out of medicine, did a human anatomy degree, got that business up and running, then finished off medicine, graduated in 2004, and sold the business then, but always kind of stayed involved in fitness and nutrition. I then worked as a clinical doctor for 9 years. I did trauma and orthopedics, musculoskeletal medicine, plastic surgery, accident and emergency, all that sort of stuff. But at the same time, I became the science editor of Muscle and Fitness magazine in the UK and Europe and Australia, and I wrote a couple of books for them. So I kind of sort of stayed involved in the industry, stayed involved in fitness, and you know, I got to experience you know, what life was like in the general population. You know, people very unfit, unhealthy, overweight, joint disease, cardiovascular disease, much of which was preventable, would have been preventable with a better quality of life. And so I always kind of had that stimulus to somehow go back into fitness and nutrition, but in a preventative way. And it was 2011, October 2011, at my best friend's wedding, Kieran McSweeney's wedding, that me and my other best friend Stuart were talking. And Stuart was a PhD geneticist, and him and his partner Sam, Dr. Sam de Comble, had been talking about or researching gene variations that were prevalent in certain types of athletes. And that kind of immediately sparked an interest in me, because one of my, although I certainly don't look like a bodybuilder, but one of my real areas of interest has always been bodybuilding. I've always been into extremes. And you can't get much more extreme in terms of muscle and fat loss, building muscle and losing fat, than bodybuilding. Great. And all the time, you know, for the last, you know, 30, 40, 50 years, you know, in the bodybuilding world, they always talk about genetics. And I always hoped one day I could start to get some context on what that actually meant. And so as soon as Stuart said that to me, I immediately thought, wow, I wonder if, you know, we could start thinking about genetics in a build muscle, lose fat kind of way. October 2011, and that's kind of where it all started with fitness. Well, what was originally called Muscle Genes, but it's now Fitness Genes.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the great thing about that is, and what I love about talking to guys like yourself, is that there's been this journey, but it's been interwoven with lots of different disciplines. And I think sometimes, as strength coaches, you know, mostly strength coaches listen to this, but it's a variation of a lot of things, a lot of different disciplines. But the reality is that, you know, whenever you step outside of your box of whatever your chosen kind of career path is, and you apply some of these lessons learned from other disciplines, you become a better strength coach, better doctor, better personal trainer, whatever it may be, and you've done that along the way. What's maybe been one of the biggest mistakes that you made in that journey, and kind of how you learn from it?
I mean, I think that, to be honest with you, there's a whole raft of mistakes. I think you know, the best people are generally formed when they, you know, make lots of mistakes. I would say, going back to the time when I was sort of really involved in personal training, I think that one of the mistakes there was perhaps certainly from a from a personal perspective, I once I qualified as a trainer and I got the ACSM certification, I stopped getting any more fitness certifications and qualifications. And, you know, actually, if I could go back and tell myself something else to do, I perhaps would have started to do, you know, various sort of strength and conditioning certifications. I would have done more nutritional qualifications. I would have gone, I even would have done, you know, the courses, the fitness and nutrition courses that we might say are not particularly very good. I wish I'd have just done them, you know, they weren't expensive. I wish I'd have, you know, I wish I could have had a massive catalog. And I'm certainly not saying that, that you know, the people that get the academic qualifications are any better or any worse. But that when you do lots and lots, when you go to lots and lots of courses, you get lots and lots of perspectives.
Right.
And I think what I stopped at a very young age was actually getting other professionals' perspectives within fitness. So I only spent 10 years getting the perspectives of people in medicine. Right. So, you know, doctors who, you know, generally speaking, doctors are not the best people when it comes to, you know, to body weight and to, you know, physique and all that sort of stuff. So all of a sudden then I was a little bit skewed in, you know, my beliefs. And it wasn't until I came back into fitness that I then started to, you know, started to listen to more and more people again. So I would say when I kind of got back into the industry, probably around 2010, I think that I probably had a little bit of an air of arrogance about me because of believing that I've been a doctor for 10 years and I actually thinking that I knew more than I actually did. And as I started to reconnect with, you know, more and more sort of fitness professionals, you know, from around the world, you know, different walks of life, it opened my eyes again to realize that actually, no, you know, this, you know, I've got to go through a whole new learning process again. And I would say that, so yeah, the mistake was stopping the formal sort of fitness education too early, not spending enough time with other fitness professionals in different disciplines at an early age. And then when I actually came back into the industry, really actually believing that I knew a lot more than I actually did, you know, and it, you know, really sort of highlighted that the paper qualifications were not what was important. It was actually the real world experience. And it's the real world experience of actually working with, you know, some of the great people that we've worked with that enabled us to really evolve, you know, our own business and products.
Yeah, I could agree with you more. I think sometimes, I mean, it's somewhere in the middle there between the science and the practice, right? And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, with strength coaches, sometimes we're obsessed with this alphabet soup and getting all these credentials behind our name. And, you know, it's not so much that you're going to get these credentials or these qualifications or these or this education just to be able to say, look, what I know. The reality is that you're deep diving into specific topics and you're learning from the practitioner and the coaches that are there and you're really learning a new discipline that you can take back and apply. And whatever you're too far to the extreme of the right with academics and research, well, most of those textbooks and most of that research is post-dated. It's stuff that's, you know, either been tried and now we're trying to prove or it's stuff that's maybe, you know, 3 or 4 years old because of the process it takes to create a textbook. And so I think it's somewhere in the middle of that and just staying connected and challenging yourself outside of your disciplines. I couldn't agree more with you. You know,
on what you just said there, a good friend of mine in the US is a coach called Per Lundstrom. Sorry, not Per Lundstrom. Brad Bose. And Brad is a former professor from one of the universities in Sweden, University of Stockholm, I think it is. And we were talking quite recently, and Brad said to me, he's been asked so many times to write a textbook, but if he wrote a textbook, the second it got published, it would all be out of date and it'd look stupid.
Right.
So, which I think, you know, completely reiterates what you just said. But by the way, I just mentioned Per Lundstrom. Per's a fantastic human performance specialist, actually. Per's the head of human performance at Red Bull. He's also Swedish. That's why I just got them just confused.
No, that's great. No, both great. I know I've read Pearl's work before as well, but you know, you've done that. You've gone through all these different things. You went through the time where, you know, like we talk about on the show quite a bit, where, you know, all of us as coaches, sometimes we have this air of arrogance because we think that we know it all. We have all these, you know, all this information, but the reality is as you get deeper and deeper into this profession, you learn that you don't really know it all, and how the greats separate themselves is they learn to ask the right questions, you know. And so now you're learning to ask the right questions. How did that all lead to Fitness Genes, and kind of what is Fitness Genes and what the work that you're doing now?
Yeah, so, well, Fitness Genes, we're a DNA testing company or a DNA interpretation company. So we look at gene variations where, based on these gene variations, we're able to predict how best you should exercise and eat depending on your goals. So let's say, for example, you're a coach, you're a strength and conditioning coach, and there's some phenomenal strength and conditioning coaches out there. If I said to you, how many ways can you think of to train somebody, you'd say, oh my goodness, I can think of hundreds of ways to train somebody. So if I was then to say to you, okay, but how do you stratify, or how do you make a decision from someone you've never met before on the best way for them to train if they give you a goal? Now, you have a whole toolbox of probably measurements and experiences that you use absolutely to guide how you make that decision. But if I was to say to you, you know what, there's one more thing that you can use, and it's DNA testing. And from DNA testing, we can give you information that would help give you more information about how you make those decisions. So we're not telling you that we're this amazing coach. What we're telling you is we can give you information that potentially will make you a better coach, because at an earlier stage in someone's journey, you could potentially better guide them into certain types of training or certain types of nutrition plans. And that's what we specialize in. So we do a lot of work, obviously, with people that want to lose weight, people that want to build muscle. We work with quite a few major league teams now. We work in most of the major leagues in the US and in the UK. We're working with people from all categories of life or walks of life. And it's really about using our product as a tool to, whether it's for coaches to, as I say, improve the accuracy or the way that they target based on their styles and methods of training, right, or whether it's their member of the public who, they need some people need some scientific validation behind what they do. And a product like this is what enables us to do that. And again, the idea for Fitness Genes came out of, this notion that somehow genetics played a role in how people looked. And, I guess no one can really question that, but what I really wanted to do was understand it. And it just so happened that, as I say, my best friend, Dr. Stuart Bryce, and his partner, Dr. Samantha de Combal, that was their area of expertise, both PhD geneticists. They've been doing research on exactly that. So when we kind of put our heads together, we realized that actually we could start to get somewhere. Right. And if you actually look in the early days of Fitness Genes, a lot of the work that we did was with, the pro bodybuilders. So we tested people like Ronnie Coleman, Dorian Yates, the biggest guys on the stage, listening to their stories, listening to their histories. We haven't come at this from a Petri dish. We've actually come at this from talking to guys in the trenches. And if you look at the people that, that we've tested over the years and that we've worked with over the years, we're well represented in this sort of, category of people where they've just generated so much experience and they have such a wealth of knowledge that when we've worked with them, we've really been able to sort of mesh our ideas and products together.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest cop-outs by strength coaches or fitness professionals around the world is all this person's not reacting because of genetics, or they have this genetic ceiling that, they're tapped out. And the reality is, I think it's just like with technology, with GPS technology, heart rate technology, things like that, we're trying to find ways to kind of minimize our training or to reduce our training because of overtraining and some of these things like that. But the reality is that the human body is capable of so much, and we should be figuring out where how high can we take the engine? What's really the threshold there? And I think you're right. With DNA testing and genetic testing, we're getting closer to being able to really make things specific and really know what that genetic ceiling is. Talk a little bit about the process. I mean, I know because I took the test, but what is it? Is it saliva? Is it blood? Is it hair? What are you doing? What are you collecting to kind of determine this?
So it's very simple. Basically, you take one of our tests, which is a saliva test. So we send the test out to you, and what you receive back from us is a tube. So you spit into the tube. You then close the tube over, and a reagent mixes with the saliva, and then that's what you send back to us. Now, in your saliva, you have cheek cells. So cells from the inside of your cheeks, and it's from those cheek cells that we're able to extract your DNA. And then from your DNA, we can look at the gene variations that are of specific interest to us. And we obviously, you know, analyze for these, it gets read out digitally, and that's what we present to our customers. So it's totally non-invasive. It's a very, very simple procedure, very quick procedure as well. We're one of the fastest personal genomics companies in the world in terms of results delivery. So it's very, very, very quick, very simple. And once we've sort of tested you, you know, we're very sort of proactive at interacting with our sort of community, people that we've tested, you know, helping them understand their results and, you know, look at the ways that they can, you know, figure out how to train. Or we work with a lot of sort of coaches and trainers around the world, or we like to try and connect our community to, you know, to good coaches and trainers around the world. We're not, you know, what we are is we're, as I say, we're a tool that people can use. Right. And one of the things we pride ourselves on is how we can work with fitness professionals, because ultimately, the more fitness professionals that you talk to, the more you realize that the amount of knowledge that's out there, experience-based knowledge, is ridiculous. Right. It's insane. You know, I'm sure you and I could sit down and you'd blow my mind with your coaching knowledge. You're going to know, you know, things that have never even crossed my desk, you know. Sure. And that's what it's like, you know, and that's one of the things that we really pride ourselves on is being so open to sit down with all your great coaches and listen to what you've got to say. And then we try and understand it from the scientific perspective. So we don't try and tell you, we listen to you, and then we try and figure it out so we can better what we can tell people in the future.
Well, I think what you said about just another tool in the toolbox, and I think that that's really the key to this. And so many times as coaches, we get to a point where, you know, the our knowledge base or how we're programming, it comes to a standstill, you know, and there's something there that's preventing that breakthrough from happening. And, yeah. And being able to go to the toolbox and use something like DNA testing to figure that out, I think is really what it comes down to. And, yeah. You know, that's what a good practitioner does.
Absolutely. I remember a few years back. Do you know Big Ron Partlow? Big Ron Partlow is one of the Canadian bodybuilders.
Yeah,
one of the nicest guys in the industry. And we sat down with Ron, and he was talking about, you know, over the years, you know, when some of these big bodybuilders, you know, they talk to, you know, scientists and people about the methods that they've used to get big, and everyone wants to tell them that they're not right in some way, and what they're saying doesn't make any sense. And actually, it's the wrong way to go about it.
Right.
We need to listen to that information, and we need to understand it. It's not, you know, it's not about contradicting it or saying that, you know, trying to be scientifically superior. It's about us understanding what we're being told. If someone really big and muscular tells you that they've trained a certain way and they've got really big and muscular, guess what? You should listen to them, because they're probably, you know, they're right. They've got the evidence. And so that's the approach that we take, you know, with everything, you know, with strength and conditioning, with building muscle, human performance, sports agility, all that sort of stuff. Listen to what you guys say, and then we do our best to try and understand it scientifically.
Right. Now, is there a difference, I mean, between doing the testing from blood versus saliva or hair or anything along those lines?
Not at all. I mean, your DNA is the same in every cell in your body.
Right.
And what we're looking at something called SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms. So these are single changes in the order of the bases that make up DNA. And so that's what we're specifically looking for. And that will be the same in whatever cell in the body that you look at. So at the end of the day, I wouldn't want to have a blood test to have a DNA test, because it's not required.
Right. And I think, you know, from a coaching perspective, that's, you know, it's not invasive. I mean, by taking SPID, it's an easy process. It can be done anywhere and quickly. What, you know, I think I read there's, what, 20,000 genes that have been identified. I think there's 43, I think, that you guys have identified as specific strength and conditioning, you know, particular genes that you're looking at. Talk a little bit about how that you came to that conclusion that there's just these 43 that we're looking at.
Yeah, so we're looking at 43 SNPs. So the SNPs are these single nucleotide polymorphisms. We're actually just about to move on to a new system where we're going to be looking at 700,000 SNPs.
Okay.
So we're moving on to a system. We're one of only two commercial DNA testing companies in the world using this new system from Illumina, the most closely matched to biobank data, one of the best kind of genetic testing products on the market. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah.
But the 43 SNPs that we're particularly looking at the moment, it's all based on research. They're the ones where they produce a protein that ultimately we have a good understanding of. Your DNA is like a recipe book, and genes are like recipes, and then the genes produce proteins, and proteins have an effect. So, you know, it might, for example, one of the genes we look at, which is the ACTN3 gene. So this is a gene that when you have one copy of, when you have one variation, it produces a protein called alpha-actinin. And when you have the other variation, you don't produce alpha-actinin. And we're finding more and more things out about alpha-actinin now. So, for example, we know it plays a role in anabolic signaling. We know that it has an effect on fast-twitch muscle recovery and fast-twitch muscle signaling, their structural properties. There's lots of really important things that we're figuring out about this particular protein. So, obviously, there's lots we can talk about there.
Yes.
So we currently look at about 43. When we start testing the new system, we're specifically probably going to be focused on about 150 to 200 SNPs. And as we grow in our science team, we'll be increasing the amount of SNPs that we look at. So we have a reasonably sized science team at the moment, quite a few PhDs, and we're collaborating with a lot of universities where we're doing a lot of original research, so we can actually grow this knowledge base. Sure. So our kind of company research is all about, well, our company process, if you like, is about using peer-reviewed research that's already out there. It's about our academic collaborations with universities, so therefore what we produce. But within our own database, it's about discovery, because obviously we have a lot of material and a lot of information that no one in the world has ever seen or ever had their hands on before. So we can actually start to make some really interesting discoveries. And we actually have our first paper coming out. I think it gets released on Friday this week, actually. And it's all to do with some of the effects of some of the obesity-related genes. So it's pretty outstanding that we're in a position where we're actually contributing to the knowledge base of science.
Right. What have you found just through the athletes that you've worked with specifically? What have you found to be some of the major common issues? I mean, maybe major, be it genes sequencing or just the type of athletes. I mean, you got different size, ectomorphs, endomorphs. Have you found anything that points that just would be a general takeaway?
Well, We do quite a bit of work now with the teams. I actually consult quite a few big teams now. And one of the things that you find is that, there's some incredibly knowledgeable coaches, but the biggest issue that they have is how do you stratify individuals into certain ways of training?
Right.
So if you end up training everybody all of the same, you're going to get some people that do great and some people that don't.
Right.
So one of the things with us that we get asked to do quite a bit is, to go into teams and specifically look at the players where they're having trouble getting their body composition under control. So increasing their lean body mass. For some reason, they're just not able to, to drop body fat. And then when you look at what they're doing, it's the same as everybody else.
Right.
But 50% of the variation between people and their physical performance and fitness and things like that is genetic. So if you don't understand that 50%, how can you then define what the environmental 50% is, or the bit that you can control, how to train, how to eat? So I think that there's a lot that I could go into, but ultimately the level of personalization is ultimately not good enough for professional teams. And when you actually come in with DNA testing and you work with the coaches and the nutritionists and you can really kind of personalize players' programs, that's when you can actually start to get somewhere with individual players. And a really good example of this, Major League Baseball.
Right.
These guys play 20, 30 days in a row, every single night, time zone changes, having to get their training in through the day, playing the games at night, managing injury. I mean, there's a lot that these guys have to manage. So you somehow have to figure out how can you optimize them. And the fact is they're not all the same. They play different positions. So it's a real, from a personalization perspective, it's a real challenge.
Right.
And when you actually really get into that and get involved in that sort of stuff, you actually realize there's a significant requirement for something like this.
I guess that's my question. I didn't do a good job of asking it. I mean, have you found that, you know, is there just even within a position group, so take running backs in the NFL, you know, is there a typical gene makeup of a running back, or if there's five running backs on the team, there could be five completely different people?
I think, so NFL is, well, there are certainly certain sports and certain positions where there are some very, very common gene variations. So, you know, when you're looking at any of the sports where there's a requirement for people to be incredibly fast and be able to be fast for long periods of time, then, you know, generally there are certain ACTN3, certain ACE gene variations, certain, you know, PGC1A gene variations that are very overrepresented.
Right.
The other thing that you have to account for as well is, I mean, and especially in things like football, I mean, football, there is a massive psychological element to football and being a great football player. And, you know, you have to be able to really, really find some real deep pain points, you know, to be an incredible football player. You know, we're very sort of balanced, you know, and there is a significant amount of influence that we can deliver in terms of training with regards to genetic testing, but we try and keep that balanced with, but this has to also be true and this has to also be true.
Right, right. Well, that's what even DNA testing, you guys have done a great job of getting that down to a manageable price point for, you know, for pro teams or even major college programs, but you know, when you're looking at high school programs and things like that, I was wondering if there's any kind of deductions that can be made on, you know, types of athletes, types of sports, and maybe the best way to train that sport based off some of the research that you guys have already done.
Well, we don't test under 18s. And the reason that we don't test under 18s is because we believe that youngsters should have a choice. And the second that you start trying to put them into buckets with their DNA results, is the second you're removing the choice from them. And that's probably not a good idea.
Right.
Because, again, if I come back to our company values, we're not about telling people what they're good at. What we're about is you tell us what you want to do and we'll tell you how best you can train to get there.
Sure.
So by understanding the output of genes, we can then understand what we need to tell people to optimize what their goals are. And what, you know, specific muscular adaptations are or improvements in certain elements of fitness. And that's why the genetics is so important. And that's why even if you did have, you know, a quarterback or linebacker or whatever who came to us and perhaps we did the gene testing and, you know, perhaps their genes were not necessarily what we might have expected, what we do have is an understanding of given what their goal is, we can still get them there.
Right. And I agree. You mentioned in there that environment obviously plays a major role. I mean, be it the training program or the nutrition program or the psychology, you know, what kind of basic recommendations would you make to strength coaches off the research that you've done, you know, in those areas in terms of environment?
Well, I think that's so. When you, assuming that you have an individual who, when you've got them in their gym environment, you know exactly how to structure their training program, you know exactly what they need to be doing in the training program, the body, the frequency, the rest, the recovery, the tempo, how you periodize over a year, you know all of those things. But we also have to remember that the period of time they're in the gym, that 45 minutes they're in the gym or an hour they're in the gym, is only 1/24 of the day.
Right.
And it's what you do in the rest of the day. So nutrition, we all have these ideas about nutrition. You know, you'll have people that talk about high protein, high fat, low carbs. Other people talk about high protein, low fat, high carbs, and also as well, you know, people talk about fast metabolism, slow metabolisms. You know, people talk about meal frequency, lots of small meals or, you know, a few infrequent large meals. There are so many ways that nutrition varies and so many ways that you can completely screw somebody up by getting their nutrition wrong.
Right.
The take-home message for coaches is always that, you know, you can do everything right in the gym, but you have to do everything right out of the gym as well.
Right.
Nutrition, sleep, You know, everyone, you know, people at the moment are in this world where everyone is completely obsessed with supplements. Now, there are certainly some supplements out there that are important, but there's also a lot that aren't, you know, and, you know, where you can get someone's mentality so focused on they have to, you know, take this these pills at these times and,
right.
and means their attention is then deviated from what is perhaps more important, good sleep, you know, recovery, doing other things, going and reading a book, going for a walk with family or friends, you know, going and having a good meal. You have to get that control right. And with genetic testing, we can essentially empower people to really understand what is going to work for their body. So when they need to eat or when they need to sleep, they're very focused on doing those things. Or, you know, perhaps the right time of the day that they drink coffee or take other sorts of supplements. And then the rest of the time, they're not worrying about whether or not they're doing the right thing. And that's where, obviously, that's where, you know, there's such a relationship between, you know, what happens in the gym and what happens out of the gym.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's a statement I make with my teams all the time is that, you know, I have them for 2 hours a day, but they have 22 hours to mess up everything we just did. And yeah. if we're not involved with those other 22 hours,
yeah.
then we're fighting a losing battle. I couldn't agree with you more on that. And, you know, I haven't gotten my test results back yet, but when you get the results, are you getting nutrition information or recommendations? Are you getting sleep recommendations? How's that information coming?
Yeah, so we give quite a lot of information, and we ultimately we talk a little bit about, you know, specific ways that you might want to focus your exercise. So, for example, you know, training volume, frequency, all that sort of stuff. We might look at things like, you know, how many meals a day you should be eating, how those meals should be balanced in terms of macronutrient ratios. Are you lactose intolerant genetically? You know, what your coffee consumption should be like. Folate consumption, salt sensitivity. There's a whole barrel of information that ultimately, when you take it on board, it essentially delivers a daily plan. You know, we look at genes related to best time to sleep, best time to get up, when your cortisol levels are likely to be high and low, the best time of the day to exercise, eat, and things like that. So there's a lot of information that forms a structure.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. Well, man, I know it's late over there, and we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of advice, you know, business, coaching, fitness advice you've ever received.
Well, there's the classic statement of if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong group. I'm a big believer in that, and ultimately, it's very, very important to surround yourself with lots of different types of people from different backgrounds and different disciplines. I would say that, you know, whether you're going into, you know, the real dungeon gyms or whether you're, you know, going, like I said at the beginning, going to perhaps, you know, seminars and things like that where you don't necessarily think you're going to particularly value it, but there might just be little nuggets that you didn't know
right.
that become really, really significant. So, yeah, this idea of, you know, just making sure you surround yourself with lots of different, I'm not saying you have to be friends with everybody, but just, you know, just be a sponge. Bill Gates once said to one of his friends, don't tell me any of your good ideas, because if I think they're good, I'm going to use them myself, you know. Want to be surrounded by those sorts of people.
Right.
The people that are going to tell you their good ideas, the people that are going to say, do you know what, I was working out the other day and, you know, I was coaching somebody and I realized that if you, you know, angle the back or angle the shoulders this particular way, you know, there's a slightly better contraction here, or you know what, instead of eating spinach today, I made a shake with some kale and, you know, I really felt like I had a bit. That sort of stuff, you know, mix with vegans, mix with paleo people, mix with, just get to know everybody, surround yourself with people on topics where you don't know anything about what they know, as long as it's related, and that's probably the best advice I can give, certainly for people wanting to progress in the fitness industry.
I couldn't agree more, and a lot of times when you become a head strength coach or the manager of a department, you want to hire subordinates that don't challenge your ideals. And that's a lot of times what's one of the worst things you can do.
Absolutely. What about hire better than you?
Say it again.
You want to hire people better than you,
no
so
doubt.
You can work.
No doubt. Support them, learn from them, and then you're gonna reap the benefits long in their career. But what about a book, app, and website recommendation?
Well, book. One of my good friends is a guy called Darren Olien. Darren is actually the creator of Shakeology, which is the Beachbody supplements. But Darren's one of these kind of super fit vegans, and he wrote this book called Super Life, which essentially it's a guide to super living. And I've got to say, it's really enjoyable book. You know, looking at sort of, you know, different life forces, and you know, some of his beliefs and principles of, you know, food and food selection, superfoods, and you know, how to create daily habits and things like that. So it's kind of one of these books that, you know, when there's people that are really sort of, you know, wanting to get a better understanding of how they can live a better quality of life. I'm not suggesting that people need to all of a sudden become vegans, but just reading these sorts of books from people that live incredibly healthy lives, and they make their food choices based on better, more nutritious, well, higher quality foods. Right. Yeah, I really enjoy that. So that's sort of one of the books that I'm reading at the moment. No, I've read it at the moment. I've read it numerous times before, but it's the one that's at the forefront of my mind.
Yeah, sure. And then app and website?
One of my favorites, to be honest, I tend to be, you know, one of these people that whenever I get any downtime, I normally just like to read the news. Right. So from a business perspective, I read the news on TechCrunch. TechCrunch is... It's TechCrunch is a site that's all to do with essentially technology, science, news, things like that. And, you know, where we are with business, it's quite an important sort of community and product for me to, you know, read information on. So TechCrunch and website, I quite enjoy reading the Forbes website. I quite like the quotes of the day that you get opened with and you go onto the site. And as always, there's always lots of interesting news, interesting sort of political spins and things like that. So they tend to be the two products I read most.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said TechCrunch, because that's one of my favorites as well. And again, in the fitness profession, it's not one that typically people will identify with or jump on. But I get so much inspiration by reading different things that people are doing in the world and technology or science or whatever, that it often bleeds over into strength and conditioning for me.
Absolutely, and I think at the moment we're in this period which they're calling Bio 2.0.
Yep.
So Bio 2.0 is essentially referring to this investment sphere of science and technology coming together. So this idea of, like, you know, all these really clever PhD biologists merging into technologists, and you know, and we're getting some really interesting companies that are popping up. So, you know, there's obviously like fitness genes, you know, with what we're doing. There's companies like Ubiome, who are all to do with looking at the gut bacteria and the effect that has on health and body composition. Lots of interesting apps that are coming onto the market. So you know, although it's science and tech, it's actually incredibly relevant to fitness and nutrition, and for very forward thinking coaches. Great. I totally get why you would be on that platform. So
I couldn't agree with you more. Well, Dan, this has been great, man. I tell you, every time that I do a podcast with individuals like yourself that are maybe not strength and conditioning coaches on their day to day, but are impacting our profession day to day. I always learn so much. I know everybody else that's listening too. And if your mind's not going wild with all the possibilities and just the challenges, I mean, that's what we do all day long, is sit around and really think about how to get our athletes better. And a lot of times it goes all the way back down to the cellular level. And what you're doing there can make a huge impact through environment or through just identifying where, you know, the type of athlete that you're dealing with. So I can tell you from my perspective, truly appreciate the work that you guys are doing, and excited to see the results that come back from me and myself, and just appreciate you coming on and sharing with everybody.
My pleasure. You know, thank you so much for having me, and look forward to connecting in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @RMcKeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @Ron.McKeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.